Howdy, y'all. You're listening to The Managing Up Show, a podcast about leading and managing in the world of technology. I'm your host, Nick Means, and with me this week are Travis Weisgood.
Howdy.
And Brandon Hayes.
Hello. Okay, so today we have a question from a listener, and this listener is asking about performance reviews. They said, I just had a fairly junior engineer ask in our one-on-one for something like a performance review. This is not something I or my company have done before. How do I provide good feedback for eager juniors and jaded seniors? How do I set clear expectations and give small feedback regularly in one-on-one so there are no surprises? How do I keep my experience and perspective from having too much influence? Is it a bad idea to tie raises to just one evaluation? Is there a way to give periodic bigger picture evaluation and advice to those who want it without doing formal reviews? Thanks. So that's a big compound question, and I love those because it tells me this person's thinking really deeply about this problem and the challenges associated with it. Like, they've really tried to attack this from several different angles. And first off, their instincts are probably better than, you know, they're giving themselves credit because they've thought so deeply about this. But I also know, like, this is a confusing topic, and I wanted to kind of throw it to you all and see, just first and foremost, what the process looks like in your experience for, like, good, healthy performance review culture.
So my experience with performance reviews has been mostly around promotions and things like that on the annual review. So you get to that one point in a year where the HR team wants to know who should get a promotion, who should get a raise, and the performance review is how they tackle that. I don't like using that as a place to actually provide feedback around how the person is doing and where they can improve. Harkening back to one of our very early episodes on OKRs, the outcome of that is generally a continuous feedback. So you're constantly kind of fine-tuning somebody's performance and providing that feedback in a little bit closer to real time. Some companies will do it on a quarterly basis. Some companies are going to do it on a weekly basis or monthly basis. So that's generally where I tend to lean. I try to ensure that the people who are reporting to me have a pretty good understanding of what they should be working on to improve.
Yeah, I think for me, I long held the attitude that formal performance reviews were basically an accounting task for a company, and they didn't really carry a lot of value. And it's sort of been in the last few years that I've spent more time thinking about, okay, well, if this is something we're going to do, how do we add value to it? And I think there's a lot of ways that you can do it. But I think the primary thing, I'll echo what Travis said, your primary means of feedback is that weekly one-on-one. You should be coaching every week, week in, week out, and providing feedback on an ongoing basis. And then your performance reviews are a chance to provide some feedback in writing. They're a chance to formalize things. They're a chance to gather in some organizations that provide for it 360-degree feedback, which is super helpful, I found. But in and of itself, there's nothing magical about doing a yearly or twice a year, or even quarterly performance review.
So yeah, you touched on something that some of our listeners are undoubtedly familiar with, but it might be new to some folks. A 360 review. Could you walk into what you mean when you say that?
Yeah. So in a 360 review, typically you'll select peers around you at your level, or if you're a manager, people that you manage and people that are above you in the organization as well, and get sort of feedback from all angles, all people who perceive you in different ways and interact with you in different ways on the job. And your manager will typically take that feedback and anonymize it is not really the right word for it. Summarize is probably a better word for it. Look for themes, look for actionable things, look for feedback that they can't get on their own just from their limited perspective as your manager.
Okay.
So there is another manager podcast out there that talks a lot about this kind of stuff. And I find myself disagreeing with it enough that I don't often recommend it to people, but selectively, there's a lot of really good stuff in there. It's certainly not aimed at technologists, but there's still stuff to be mined. There's a podcast called Manager Tools, and we'll link to it in the show notes. And they actually have a really decent series on performance reviews specifically and how to deliver them. And so I don't want to rehash a lot of what they've talked about there. But the idea, though, that they're sort of working within is the constraint that there are organizations that require that you do this. There are organizations that will dictate this to you. For the people in those types of organizations, I don't want to sort of steamroll whatever their process is with my own opinions about that. Like, different organizations have different ways that they want to do that. But basically, you definitely want to give somebody some kind of feedback. Annual does feel really laggy, though. Nobody wants any sort of surprises at the end of the year. But there are formulas that you can follow to demonstrate what you saw from somebody through the course of the year. My experience with annual performance reviews is in workplaces where they're basically mandatory. And I think they should perform the function of basically being a roll-up. Like, your annual performance review at that point should be a collection of the feedback that you've been giving them consistently through the year. And hopefully you've been doing some record keeping about that, that you have a roll up of the records that you've kept throughout the year. Hey, this quarter we said we were going to try to accomplish this. In the next quarter, we realized, hey, we need to adjust the process. In the next quarter, we adjusted a little more. But by the last quarter of the year, we had a pretty good idea of what we were trying to accomplish together. Let's take a look at that and see how you performed and what you demonstrated and didn't demonstrate. I personally don't draw a ton of value from that process, but it does sort of feed the machine of a company. And sometimes that's the process you have to go through to actually help somebody achieve some sort of either performance recognition or get raises or promotions or whatever. So at minimum, I just want to recognize that this is a thing that some companies are going to ask you to do.
As you were talking there, you're reminding me of something that I do with my one-on-ones. And I found it's a little bit easier when I'm dealing with somebody who's remote than somebody who's in the same office as I am. But we keep collaborative notes on our one-on-ones. So I've used everything from a Google Doc to a paper document in Dropbox or a private Confluence space. Just anywhere where you both can see and work through a text document. Having that, as you were describing your process, something I think I could add to that is a themes section. It's not necessarily something we're going to touch on and spend a lot of time. It's not like an agenda bullet point, but these are the things we're going to work on, and just kind of a weekly reminder. Hey, is there anything that we should be talking about along this line? I say it works better with remote. With remote, we're both sitting looking at a computer screen and the camera in front of us. So it's a lot easier to kind of glance down and write a note or read something that somebody else is writing. When you're in the same room, it always feels a little awkward to have a computer, two computers sitting on the desk between you. So I haven't found as good of a solution for in person.
I've had luck doing exactly that in person, where we're co-editing a doc, especially if we take over a meeting room with a shared screen, if you're doing an in-person review type of thing. And actually, that's a really good point, that documentation, whatever documentation you're producing in the course of this, can actually be a shared area of focus for you two. So you're not just talking at each other about your expectations. You're talking to a third like impartial judge of this thing, which is the document that you're collaborating on together. I like that tactic a lot.
Yeah. And if you take it with a tool like Paper or Confluence that has a lightweight task system built into it, it's really easy to say, okay, this is the thing we're going to work on this week. And when you open up that space the next week, it's sitting there staring you in the face. Okay, did this get done? And it gives you that just extra little bit of accountability on both sides, whether that's an employee doing something for you or you as a manager, something that you're taking on to get them information or provide some sort of guidance that they need. It can be a really good accountability tool in my experience.
We should do an episode on one-on-ones. It seems basic, but I think there's a lot of value there that the three of us could mine from our various experiences at doing one-on-ones. But there's one thing here that I really want to call out. And I think that it's really important if you are in a company that does annual performance reviews or periodic performance reviews of some sort, that you do take notes on an ongoing basis, because you're not going to remember everything. You think you will. You think you will, but there's so much information that passes through our heads over the course of even a given week that it's way too easy to drop significant accomplishments on the floor. And I think it's important that that memory, like you're saying, Travis, be a collaborative task, so that it's not just your job as a manager to write all that down and to collect all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it requires more discipline than you think it's going to set that process up for the first time if you've been doing it sort of ad hoc and you're doing one-on-ones. I think every manager enters one-on-ones with like, hey, let's chat, let's talk about your work week, let's talk about how things are going. But periodically, one-on-ones are going to have a feedback mechanism in it that says, we need to actually record this down. This was a significant win. And we need to make a note of the fact that you optimized this thing and it improved performance for our customers by this much, and people aren't spending their time waiting on this thing anymore. We will forget in December when it's time to do this, that you did this. So let's write it down now. We'll start some sort of way to demark that this goes in your win book or whatever, because this is an opportunity to advocate. As far as setting expectations for people, I want to get your experiences with this, because I can tell you what I've done in the past that I have liked, but it's not the only way of doing this. When you're setting performance expectations for people to be able to review later, separating the idea of role-based performance from sort of cross-role just expectations you'd have of anybody. So for instance, you have an engineering ladder, and you can say, on our engineering ladder, here's what I would expect of a person in your position to do. There are a couple of areas that you probably need to improve on. Almost nobody ticks all the boxes on their current role. There's areas of possible improvement, and there's definitely areas where they want to grow into the next role on that ladder, if you're using ladders properly and well and whatever. And, you know, that's not an art that most of us do extremely well, but let's assume you have something like that.
And if you need a primer, you should refer back to our episode this past winter about ladders.
Yeah, there was some good stuff in there from some of our guests as well. And the other half of it is stuff that's sort of global across roles, about what basic professional performance looks like for somebody. Can you be relied on? Are you respectful to peers? Do you treat people with respect? Essentially, what I would call cultural guidelines, like how well do you uphold the culture, the cultural values of your organization? And in my ideal world, those are turned into like measurable criteria for does not meet expectations or needs improvement, meets expectations and exceeds expectations. And I've worked in environments where you run through that list with people periodically, let's say, and really more than every 3 to 6 months is overkill, but every, 6 to 12 months, run through with somebody and say, here's where I see you falling on this. If anything falls in the needs improvement category on the cultural stuff, that's an immediate red flag and it needs to be fixed by the next review or there's big problems. But, you know, meets and exceeds, you should record those down, especially on the exceed side, as like wins. This person demonstrated an example of like exceeding our cultural values by going above and beyond in this way, and make a note of those things and periodically do a review. Like I said, on both sides of the house, the sort of like tangible, hands-on, work-related stuff, basically what is the culture add that this person is bringing to the table? I think those get underrepresented sometimes in performance reviews.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. One thing I also want to call out is I think one of the traps I fell into early on, and I think a lot of managers fall into, is setting project-based goals with people on their teams. You know, if you sit down and you write down on paper, by the end of this quarter, I'm going to deliver features X, Y, and Z. Well, what happens when the roadmap changes and suddenly A, B, and C are the important things? Suddenly you've left somebody that doesn't have goals and you've got to go in and edit them. And you can do that. I mean, they're certainly editable. You can certainly change them as you go, but it's a lot easier if you set things up for career-oriented objectives where someone is seeking growth that will aid them beyond the current quarter and that will benefit them, not just the company.
Yeah, I've inherited teams before where the priorities have shifted of the company and I've had leads come to me and say, hey, this is great. I'm really excited about this, but I have something in my contract that ties a big bonus in the next 6 months if I deliver this project and you're pulling me off of it. What's going on here?
Yeah. And to that same topic, it's important to set goals that are still aligned in some way. I've done work where I've set goals for people where I'm like, you said you want to learn this stuff. I think it's a really good goal to learn this new technology. And their incentives are completely aligned in another direction. And carving out time to away from that to go learn this other thing that they're interested in and micro their career, but there is no track preserved for them to go. There's no incentive structure for them to carve that out other than you're going to be disappointed in them later. Those are dangerous sort of goals to set for a future performance review.
Yeah, one of the things I like to think through as I'm discussing goals with folks on my team is how am I going to support this? I, as a manager, this goal is not just the person that's writing it. It's not just their responsibility. It's my responsibility as well to make sure that I give them the opportunities and the time and the investment and the tools that they need in order to hit that goal. And so if it's something, and it's sort of just a check along the lines of, is this aligned with where we are as a business and the things that we're building right now? Is this something that I, as a manager, can support? And if it's not, I mean, the right answer is just to be honest and go, you know what, that's a great goal and it would grow your career, but that's not where we're going to be over the next quarter. These are the things that we should probably look at instead.
Yeah. For instance, I really care a lot about doing public facing work, like writing a blog post or speaking or giving a meetup talk or something like that. For some people, that's really great and really aligned with their natural tendencies. And in some workplaces, say like a consultancy, that's tied to the revenue model of the company. And it's very easy to incentivize that and get people in line with that. And then when I left consultancy world and went to startup world, that was not a priority anymore. And I was trying to hold people accountable for doing that kind of work that is very naturally, you know, lends itself in a consultancy environment. And it was a train wreck. Like, you know, people weren't meeting their goals and they were feeling frustrated and they were feeling all this additional pressure because I could not support that.
So I want to dive into this other question that they asked here. How do I keep my experience and perspective from having too much influence? I'm curious to get your all's take on this. I think mine is going to be potentially a little bit of a surprise to the questioner. I think that they're kind of on the right path of the questions that they should be asking, but by virtue of asking that question, they're already in a pretty good place. The thing that was hardest for me when I started managing people was remembering that the people I was managing didn't have the same experience or opinions that I did, but my experience and opinions were really useful to be able to provide them as guidance. As this is what's worked for me. And just because it worked for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you, but this is one thing that's happened or that has worked, and remembering to offer that with a your mileage may vary caveat.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I talk about a lot as I'm coaching engineers, especially earlier in their careers, one of the things you're going to get good at as you go along this road of being an engineer is you're going to get better at pattern matching. You're going to recognize things that you've seen before and be able to apply your expertise because you recognize that you're in a similar situation. And I think the same thing is true of managers, because I mean, by and large, we're points in all three of our careers where we've not been engineers in the organizations in which we are leading. We don't have direct experience about what it's like to be an engineer in this organization, but we can look around and look for those patterns, see the things that successful engineers are doing, see the things that the people who are being most successful and most influential inside of our organization. And we've managed enough people that we have some visibility into those patterns that somebody who's observing from the trenches, from the code face, might not have. And so I think that's one of the keys to this is, as you're giving that guidance, as you're giving that coaching, don't give it from a place of your experience. Give it from a place of, these are the patterns that I recognize in the organization. These are the things that I see successful engineers here do. Here are some ways that you can push yourself that will move you more in that direction.
That's a really profound thought. And I want to pause and reflect that for a second. That's a very humble take on it. It's not about your opinion about things. And they're not coming to you for your wisdom as a manager. You have a job to do. And your job is to observe success patterns, find out what those are, match them against your experience, and then reflect that back to the team so that they feel like they have a foundation to stand on of, if I'm doing these things, this is likely to result in success here. And making those as concrete as you can and defining what constitutes success, the more concretely you can define that, the easier a time you're going to have. Until it becomes, you know, rigid and constraining, there should be some flexibility there. But describing what success is inside your organization in this type of situation to a person should be something that other managers besides you could do, ideally. That this is not just about your opinion. This is actually about, you kind of move the locus of control outside yourself as a manager. They're not coming to appeal to you and say, please like my work so that you can recommend me for a promotion. They're saying, is what I'm doing stuff that would make me successful here? And I really like that reframing. It moves it outside of you, the manager, and it's less intimidating. You don't have to be responsible for what success is there. You're not the arbiter and judge of success. You're the descriptor. You're just describing what it is to the people there. You notice it. So I really like that.
There is a key caveat here that we should call out. And that's okay. That sometimes as an engineering leader, you will be in the position where you are the arbiter and you will be trying to change an engineering culture. And in that case, you do have to apply more of your subjective experience to help shape the engineering organization.
But you should still be able to justify it.
Sure, absolutely.
And describe the consequences of not doing it. Hey, this leads to this, this leads to this. And I notice when I'm in culture change situations and I'm describing it to somebody, the way I describe it resonates with them. They're like, oh my God, I feel this pain right now. Like, yeah, what I'm describing are the things that lead to the kind of pain you're already starting to experience now. I'm not just trying to like wave a flag saying, hey, there's, you know, the bridge is out that way. You're already feeling the pain. You can already see it yourself. I'm just describing it to you in a way that you can understand. And then you have the sort of, you have a lot more influence to be able to start making those changes and some trust when you say, hey, this is how we're going to describe success in the future. That's a good point, though.
Yeah, that's an area that I struggle with a lot. I see the other side of the bridge and where we're going and start trying to pull in that direction and forget the context that I have. I feel like I do a better job with the people that are immediately around me and maybe not the people that are the second tier or third tier around me, the ones that are affected by proxy of changes that are being made. And that's an area that I struggle with constantly.
Yeah. And there's always going to be differences of opinion. Like I've sat in rooms with other managers where they're like, this person's a great engineer because their code is really clean. And I'll be like, wait, what? What business value are they generating? You know, I'm business value bias, product bias, and that person is, you know, quality bias. And that's okay. Like, but we need to recognize that those are biases. And hopefully an engineering team can sort of write down or document or at least discuss what their collective values are and tie those values to why that makes the organization successful before they start trying to hold people accountable for it. I've seen engineering teams where different managers have different rules by which they govern their teams and hold people accountable to completely different things. And then people move between teams and they were either really successful in one team and went to another team and collapse or vice versa. So the question asker is doing a really good job of trying to suss that out and say, hey, how do I not be an island? How do I, you know, be instead of being the judge of that? And like you said, Nick, if you can justify why this is, it's just justification. If you can justify to the team why this is likely to result in success, whether it's we need to change and this will result in this the change that we need, or this is what success looks like in this organization. And that's already, the patterns of success are well enough established that we're just trying to not copy paste, but certainly, like you said, pattern match against that. So I want to move the conversation to the next question because I feel really good about that answer, Nick. I actually want to think about that some more. I can't wait to actually listen back to this podcast and hear you say it again. I really want to drill that into my brain because I love it. The next question I think is also really great, which is it a bad idea to tie raises to just one evaluation? And that's such a loaded question.
I mean, like all programming problems, isn't the correct answer, it depends. Like, what is the evaluation? What are you evaluating? If you've saved the company single-handedly, you might have a problem with hero culture that you need to address at the corporate culture level, but maybe it's worth a raise. By the same token, if you single-handedly lost the largest client that you have, I think that
even then,
those are extremes.
But even then, like the two questions that this thing is, that are sitting behind this is, what are evaluations for and what are raises for? Are those two things even in the same neighborhood? I don't know. I want to kind of like open that up. What are evaluations for and what are raises for?
So evaluations tend to be retrospective. Raises and other incentives tend to be forward looking. And so when you're doing a performance evaluation, you're talking somebody through, here's all of the things that I've seen you do over the last 6 months, last year. These are all great things. These are ways you could improve. A raise is more about shaping behavior, encouraging behavior, saying, not only are these characteristics good, these are things that we as an organization attach monetary value to, and you have delivered more value to the organization than we're paying you for currently, and we want to keep you around. So we're going to give you a little bit more incentive to stay here. And that's even more true when you get into things like bonuses or long-term incentive like stock options. Mm-hmm. One thing I think we should call out here real quick, though, is it's not a good idea for these to be in the same conversation. It is proven that when people are expecting to get information about their salary, about their compensation, they will not onboard feedback. There's a boatload of research out there on that.
That's literally all they can hear.
Yep.
They're waiting to hear it, then they hear it, and that's all they heard is the number.
I can't remember if we covered this in our OKR episode, but that was one of the big takeaways from that was, it's great to have OKRs. It's great to have these conversations. Do not have those conversations about whether or not you met all of your objectives at the same time that you're having a conversation around comp.
It's funny because that's one of the areas in which we disagree really strongly. I don't know if y'all listen to the Manager Tools podcast. It sounds very corporate. Like it sounds like an audio book on tape from the 80s in the intro and stuff, but there's good stuff in there. But one of the things I definitely disagree strongly with is this idea that this is the same conversation, that you get the comp conversation out of the way and then you talk about performance. I can't imagine how that's productive for anybody in the room. I definitely agree that should be split out. I'm not aware of that research, but that makes it definitely jibes with my experience anecdotally. So the question is, if you tie it together, you should definitely have it in a separate conversation. And some companies are going to require that these things be tied together. But if raises are sort of recognizing changes in value, like your value has changed in some meaningful way, is that tied to, you know, tied to an evaluation of some kind?
I mean, so there's a lot of different motivations to give raises. Larger organizations will typically try to target their comp with some market evaluation. So they want to keep your comp, say, at the 50th percentile, or they're really cheap and keep you at the 25th percentile. And your pay will move around based on what the market is bearing. And that doesn't have a whole lot of reflection on your individual performance. It's just a market-based adjustment. But then there's other things like, say, you got a promotion from engineer to senior engineer. There's typically going to be a compensation bump with that. But what happens in the intervening years? Are there raises? If so, why are there raises?
So that you don't quit. I mean, like, that's most of the places I've worked are like, they should just call them retention raises. Like, please don't go.
I mean, even if it's not a promotion from an engineer to senior engineer or senior engineer to staff engineer, yeah, by virtue of having stuck around, especially in a product company, the domain expertise that you have, even if you're delivering code at the exact same level that you were, you now have so much more domain expertise that you're bringing to bear every day at work that's providing value.
That's extremely true.
Yep. Yep. A lot of times raises are paying replacement cost. In a smart company, raises are paying replacement cost.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You're getting more expensive to replace. Yeah. So when people talk about when the question asker is saying, is it bad to tie them to just one evaluation? Well, I don't know that tracks, because hopefully these evaluations are happening consistently over the course of time. I don't know how often people give raises, and I feel like this is almost its own topic, but my guess is people aren't typically given raises more than annually. And so there is usually a job for a manager to do. There's usually some logistical job for you to go in and help your people with less context of the day-to-day goings on with individuals to justify that, to say, hey, this is the value this person's providing. This is what they're learning. This is how they're increasing their value to the company and, you know, overall increasing their market value. And I think here's how we're justifying this stuff. And then depending on your role, you may be in charge of taking a fixed amount of money and allocating it to people, or just lobbying it upwards and saying, here's why my team deserves blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know many managers that have the latitude to decide whether a raise is tied to this performance review or not. It's more of an advocacy role, which I in some ways I kind of dig, having been the person deciding exactly the dollar amount I take out of my pocket in my own business and give it to people. I kind of like the advocacy role.
Yeah. I mean, I've got kind of a tail chasing answer to this one. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a bad idea to tie raises to just one evaluation. You should tie a raise to trajectory. But your end of year performance review is the time to discuss trajectory. And so ideally, you've been tracking trajectory over the course of the entire year. And that's what you're basing the raise on, even if there is a specific point in time at which you must account for that.
I definitely had a visual picture in my mind of what you're talking about, like a dotted line from point A to point B, and there's some, you know, invisible point C off in the future. And as long as you can plot these along a reasonable line, you shouldn't have to use too much imagination to project at any given time. You could do an evaluation at any point along that line if you're aware of that trajectory, and you can say, okay, this person is, you know, increasing in value here at this rate. And some people will do so very rapidly. Yeah. Some people will provide value very consistently. Some people will decrease in the value they provide over time, and you should probably be talking to them about that more frequently than yearly.
And it can be spiky. It's not always a smooth trajectory. So you're kind of looking for a best fit plot over time.
Yeah, my experience actually is it's usually either flat or spiky. It's never like, wow, this person's on a forever, you know, hockey stick trajectory.
Yeah, nobody has the career of the yodeler on The Price is Right.
I never got that before the guy fell off. I would have been terrible at that game show. So the other question, and I think I don't want to oversimplify this question because there's an easy answer to it, but the last question I want to talk about is there a way to give periodic bigger picture evaluation and advice to those who want it without doing formal reviews? So like more than how's it going in a one-on-one, less than let's talk about your performance this year. Is there a happy medium in there? And if so, how did you reach it? In other words, how does your team know how they're doing right now?
So for me, the employees that I've had that relationship with, where there's a constant feedback and a constant dialogue, and the idea of an annual review or even a quarterly review is almost laughable because we know exactly where everybody stands. That's come down to trust. And that takes a lot of time to build up that trust. And working with somebody, this kind of calls back to Kim Scott's radical candor with the care deeply, challenge directly. That care deeply part is how you build that trust. Building that rapport with someone who reports to you is just something that in my experience takes time. There's no real shortcut to that. And that's some of the hard work of being a manager. I'd say it's probably some of the hardest work that we do. And once you have that built up, and that can be built up with somebody that's a senior level developer, or maybe it's another manager that reports to you, or it could be all the way down to a junior developer, their first gig out of college. But once you've built up that rapport, then you can start offering that really honest, candid feedback on a really tight loop, whether that's on a weekly one-on-one or whenever the need arises. you can't really offer that as candidly if you don't have that relationship built up and that trust there.
Yeah, I guess I can share a story that's a little bit personal at this point at a recent workplace where one of the people that reported directly to me, we went through this thing where we went through leadership training, and one of the things was learning how to gather better quality feedback from people directly to kind of create your own 360 feedback loop with people and say, hey, help me get better at my job. And one of the questions was, what would be even better if I did differently? What would you want to see different? And this person said, Brandon, you're really direct with feedback, but you're so direct sometimes that when you offer me really tough feedback, it makes me feel like you don't even like me, which is like so hurtful because I like him so much. You know, I care so much about this person, but caring isn't the secret to care personally axis that Kim Scott talks about. It's demonstrating that you care personally, which is different than just caring. It's more than that. It's showing them and demonstrating them. Like you said, that's the work. The work isn't just getting yourself into a position where you care about their lives. You obviously care. You wouldn't be doing this sort of like nurturing work of being a manager. It's demonstrating that to them in some way and showing them, hey, I found this thing for you. I think it could really benefit you. I listened the last time you asked for something and I actually went and did something about it. Here it is. So there's all this work that you do to demonstrate to people. And you're right. There's no shortcut. You just have to show them that you care to earn the license to give them that direct feedback in these smaller conversations. And I think you're right that that's more important than whether you write all of your criteria on a sheet and, you know, any jerk can sit in a room and say, here are the ways in which you are not meeting expectations on our cultural values. And a person would get nothing out of that other than this guy sucks. This workplace sucks. I'm out of here. So that's a really good point. I sort of like went straight for all of that stuff with the baseline assumption that people are doing that work, but how could I expect that? Because I don't always do that work.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the baseline of all of this is high quality, high fidelity one-on-ones on a regular basis. But I think that even if you're doing that, even if you've built rapport, you're having very transparent one-on-ones, you're providing great feedback all the time along the way, it's sort of like driving before we had Google Maps. There's still some merit to pulling off on the side of the road and pulling out the big map and looking at where you are on the road and where you're going and making sure you're still on the right path. And I think as managers, that's the real value in these periodic bigger picture evaluations, is to stop and to talk to somebody about their career trajectory and about where they want to go and about how that's changed since the last time we talked about this in depth 6 months ago. How are you thinking about your career differently? What are the things that I could be doing for you to help you achieve the things that look like they're your long-term goals now? And I don't think there's a great way of doing that. I mean, you don't have to sit down and write it down on paper. You don't have to have some formal HR accounting process of documenting it or whatever. But I do think it's critical to stop on a periodic basis and have those bigger picture conversations.
So I guess one way of looking at that is if the traditional performance review is like your big Rand McNally map that you'd keep in the trunk of your car, the continuous performance reviews that you see in the more OKR style model, that would be your Google map.
I think that's true. But I think, you know, at the risk of overstraining this metaphor a little bit, which is a thing that I love to do, it's sort of like driving down the highway. You're not going to veer dramatically off the side of the road most of the time. Most people are going to keep going down the road just fine. But if you don't stop and pull out the map and have those big picture conversations, everybody's got these inflection points in their career where they do have to sort of make a directional decision about where they want to go. And if you don't stop and have these periodic conversations, I think you're at risk of missing those inflection points and missing points to give people critical feedback about the decisions they're making about their career. Critical not in the negative sense, but critical as in these are places where your expertise as a manager can really make a qualitative difference in someone's life.
Okay, so question asker, this is no less than an existential question about the quality of management that you actually do for your whole career. No pressure. I totally agree with that. This is a topic that we've pitched and kicked around periodically over the last year that we've been doing this and have been avoiding it because it's so intimidating, because so many companies do it differently, and because doing it wrong feels so costly. Mm-hmm. But it's also something that I see a lot of companies and teams and managers sort of nibble around or just comply with their organization's guidelines just in the most perfunctory fashion, which I find very distasteful. I totally understand why it happens, but it's a total bummer that this is something that's actually an opportunity to make a qualitative difference in somebody's life, like you said, Nick, but people pass it up because they are trying to get it out of the way so that they can comply with their company's directives. And I think there's a middle road where you can sort of, it, you can satisfy your company, sure, but the reason these things exist is not so your HR department gets to check something off their list, more than likely. It is so that people that work there can become better at their jobs and derive more value from it and provide more value. And you can facilitate that if you really take that responsibility on and wire it into your one-on-one schedule. But also, like you said, it is totally fine to pause. In engineering, we talk about it a lot. Go slow to go fast. Pause. Think. Write a test. Describe what it is that you're trying to do. Stop trying to write code and start thinking about why you're writing the code. Stop thinking about, you know, just plowing forward through what you're doing and going heads down on your managerial project, and pull over sometimes and look at why you're doing that for somebody. I think that's a really great way to sort of tie together this conversation. And I think I've definitely learned a lot in the course of this. Like I said, I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. These are my favorite kind of podcasts where I come into it with one opinion. And by the time we get through it, 45 minutes to an hour later, my thinking has evolved. So I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's fun because I am friends with you all, but over the course of listening to the podcast, I've kind of become fans of yours as well. So for everybody else listening, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you also learned something today. If you have additional questions, we obviously love it when people share their thoughts and their challenges with us. You can hit us up at Managing Up Show on Twitter, or any of us here. I am Tev Viking on Twitter.
I am NMeans on Twitter. And I'm going to tag in real quick to say that my favorite discussions so far have been the ones that have come from listener questions. So please, please reach out if you have things that you want us to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Travis Weisgood, and T. Weisgood just about everywhere.
And if you would like to help the show, as Nick said, ask us questions at Managing Up Show, or just reach out to us and let us know what you think of the show and share it with your friends. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. All the stars, so many stars. And we will see you all next time.
Thanks, y'all.
See ya.